This is a PowerPoint talk on Astrology, Is Your Destiny in the Stars? By Robert Newman, now Emeritus Professor of New Testament and Christian Evidences at Biblical Theological Seminary. Astrology is very popular today and has been popular for quite a long time. Most bookstores have many books on the subject. You'll find that nearly every paper has got an astrology column, and that you can now get your horoscope through the internet as well. We want to look at astrology in our talk here. We want to think about several topics related to this particular subject, particularly these: the history of astrology, where does it come from, how has it changed over its time, scientific problems for astrology. It is not nearly as scientific as its proponents would sometimes want to represent it as, and what the Bible has to say about astrology. So that's the direction we want to go here. We want to start out first then with the history of astrology. We find that the origins of astrology are really lost in antiquity. We think perhaps that it might have originally been related to planting at the right season. We'll see in a moment how that might be. But we do have some hints of what probably is astrology in early civilizations. Two of these particularly would be the structure at Newgrange in Ireland, dating from about 3000 BC, and the rather different structure in Stonehenge, England, dating in its earliest parts from about 2500 BC and its completed form with the uprights and the stone across connecting them from about 1500 BC. At Newgrange, Ireland, we have a large mound which we would call with a passage grave inside. The mound is some 35 feet high and nearly 300 feet across. Passage inside, the tunnel and the inner chamber that forms the grave, a total about 75 feet long, so not reaching really to the center of the mound. And the interesting thing from a perhaps astronomical or astrological perspective is that the inner chamber and its passage has been designed in such a way that it is illuminated by the sun only a few days on either side of the winter solstice. So it's sunrise on winter solstice, given that the weather is clear, the sun shines through the passage and illuminates the inner chamber. At Stonehenge, England, we have this large circle of upright stones, and that stone circle was completed about 1500 BC. However, there are a number of major sight lines in connection with the structure there that mark off where the sun rises at the summer solstice, and at the winter solstice, where it sets at the summer solstice and winter solstice, and then where the moon rises and sets at its extreme northern rising and extreme northern setting and such. Most of what we have about origin of astrology we really have to guess about. Do notice that the position of the stars relative to the sun in some sense can be viewed as predicting the agricultural seasons. Already back in Egyptian history, perhaps as early as 4000 BC, we have a realization that the rising of the sun simultaneously with the rising of Sirius, one of the brighter star, the brightest star actually, was a marker for when the Nile would begin to rise. And in that sense, then, the position of the star relative to the sun predicts the agricultural seasons. This is true with a number of other stars as well, and became a means by which early farmers were able to tell when to begin to plant, not having calendars with dates on them and almanacs and such, as were the case in recent centuries. The position of stars can also be used to tell time at night. You need to know how to do that because the stars shift to the westward as the seasons go on. The upshot is that if you've got the right information, you can actually look up at the sky and tell, for instance, which way the Big Dipper is pointed and knowing what time of year it is, and actually make a good estimate on what time it is at night, which obviously would be valuable since sundials don't work very well at when the sun is down, huh? Well, the Babylonians and the Egyptians had early developed techniques for doing this sort of thing, and this may be something that lies behind astrology. If the stars can predict the agricultural seasons, if they can tell you what time of night it is, maybe they can tell you something else as well. Well, we do know that in Babylonian civilization, we have the first clear evidence of what we would call astrology. We find astrology mixed up with other forms of divination, other forms of fortune-telling, we might say, other forms of prediction. Astrology was used then to tell the future, together with other forms of divination, such as liver-looking, in the picture here in our slides, taken from National Geographic. We have a Babylonian looking at a clay model of a liver, and out of the picture we have a person lying on a couch, obviously sick in some sort, and this person is trying to diagnose his disease by looking at the actual liver taken from a sacrificed lamb or sheep, something of that sort. Certain models had been developed which gave information on telling what various bumps and colors would tell. Well, astrology is kind of one of those kind of techniques. Basically, the idea of the various divinatory techniques was that their gods exist and that these gods will communicate with humans, but humans need to know the right techniques to interpret what the gods are saying. Well, Babylonian astrology can be seen in several different features from ancient Babylonian materials. One of them is these step pyramids that we call ziggurats, buildings basically inhabited on the outside, climbed up and such, where the heavenly bodies were observed from the upper part and worshipped. Often in the ziggurats, the top story was painted kind of a blue, whereas the rest of it was not, and perhaps giving the idea of this is the heavens or something you're looking at up there. A second remainder of Babylonian astrology would be inscribed pillars called stelae, which we see pictures of the sun, the moon, of Venus, and the various constellations depicted on these things. And thirdly, on a number of clay tablets, we have menologies, a word that's similar to astrology, but menology means a study of the moon, whereas astrology, study of the stars. Menologies giving lucky and unlucky days and months for various activities. Here, for instance, in a Babylonian menology, we have this particular thing. For an army in battle or conquering the hostile land, that activity is lucky in 5 months, Iyar, Elul, Heshred, Arch-Samna, and Adar, and it is unlucky in the other 7 months. A sample of the kind of information you've got there. What we see with Babylonian astrology is it's strongly connected to polytheism. That is, we're in a society in which there believed to be a number of gods, and objects we call planets, those objects that appear to look like stars but drift among the stars, were viewed as gods or goddesses, and so their movements are telling you things about the future. Huh? Typically, in Babylonian astrology, the predictions were for whole societies or for their rulers in particular, rather than for individuals, as later astrology came to be. When we move on to Greek astrology, we will see the shift. Already at Plato's time, about 375 BC, the Greeks had identified the planets with the gods, and this may be something they borrowed from the Babylonians, as they have rather similar identifications. Our astronomical terms we use today typically come from the Greeks by means of the Romans, so our planet names, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, etc., are the Roman gods and goddesses corresponding to the Greek gods and goddesses for which they named the planets. So the planet names come there. The constellation names that we have typically come from Latin with lots of Arabic star names, and they were carried over from the Greeks as well, and these are apparently fairly similar to the Babylonian constellations with some differences, particularly those constellations through which the sun, moon, and stars passed, and therefore which their the interrelationship between these star groups and the planets would be part of astrology, those are particularly important for astrology, and also are the astronomical names we have today. So the constellations in the sky, many of those go back to the Greeks and the Romans, and their names as well, particularly the constellations of the zodiac. Greek astrology was doubtless influenced by the Babylonian astrology when Alexander conquered all the Middle East and united East and West with his rather sudden incursion into the Middle East from 333 to his death in 323 BC. And the upshot of that was a mixing of Greek philosophy with mathematics with Babylonian astrology. Because the Greeks had more interest in individual than the Babylonians did, at least as best we can tell, this led to a modification of astrology for individual use, as well as for use by rulers and advice for how nation-states should conduct themselves as well. Today's astrology is basically Greek with virtually no changes. The classical Greco-Roman astrology, which comes down to us, basically uses the seven planets, Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. You might say, wait a minute here, the Sun and Moon planets. Well, it depends on your definition of planets. There have been a lot of hullabaloo recently here about demoting Pluto from being a planet. But planets to the ancients were objects that moved in the sky that drifted among the other stars. The other stars they called the fixed stars, not because they didn't move across the sky, but because they retained fixed relationships to one another. So that over many centuries, objects like Orion, the Big Dipper, and such would seem to have the same shape. Whereas moving among those, the Sun would appear to drift eastward relative to the fixed stars in such a way as to make one circuit through them in the course of the year. The Moon would appear to move eastward among the fixed stars in such a way as to make a one trip around every month. And then Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, the other planets, which modern planets which were known to the ancients, would make more irregular movements through the sky as well. Notice Earth is missing. The ancients were not aware that the object we stand on is also the same category as Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, etc. And Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are missing because although Uranus is visible from the Earth, it had not been seen, had not been noticed as being a planet at that time. Those were all discovered from the 1700s to the 1900s here, so rather recent. Besides the seven planets of classical Greco-Roman astrology, we have the 12 constellations of the zodiac along which, through which, these seven planets move. And their names, modern names, are Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricornus, Aquarius, and Pisces. And those are basically a ram, Aries the ram, Taurus the bull, Gemini the twins, Cancer the crab, Leo the lion, Virgo the virgin, Libra the scales, balance scales, Scorpio, scorpion, Sagittarius, a archer, often viewed as what do we call those animals? Combination human horse animals. Capricorn, another combination animal, a goat with a fish tail. Aquarius, a fellow carrying water. And Pisces, a couple of fishes. Besides the seven planets and the 12 constellations of the zodiac, these were viewed as moving, if you like, among 12 houses of the horoscope. And these basically divided up the sky into 12 sectors based on basically where the Earth's horizons were at that time. And these 12 houses gave information on what the planets and constellations were telling us about persons, various aspects of a person's life. The first house of the zodiac was telling about the person's life in general. The second house about the riches he would have, or the poverty. The third about his kindred, his relatives. The fourth about inheritance. The fifth about children. The sixth about sickness. The seventh about marriage. The eighth about death. The ninth about journeys that he would make, she would make. the next about honor, and then about friends, and finally about enemies. Besides the 12 houses of the zodiac, horoscope, and the 12 constellations of the zodiac, and the 7 planets, various angular relationships between the constellations and the houses, or between the planets and one planet and another and such, would tell you things about how these various forces were acting on one another. And these various angular relationships, opposition, two things opposite one another in the sky, square at right angles, trine at 60-degree angles, and of course being in the same general direction in the sky as well. These gave information which then furnished considerable material by which one could construct a prediction regarding the person. Typically, the major horoscope for a person was felt to be the alignment of the stars, planets, and houses at the time of the person's birth, and then various other things about what was happening with the person at a particular time in their life. Would be based on a horoscope taken at a particular time. So a great deal of scope here for making predictions of one sort or another. This has all been somewhat Baudelaireized, simplified in the newspaper columns, where you basically read a little blurb for a particular day about your sun sign, what constellation of the zodiac the sun is in at the time of your birth. We'll come back and talk about that later on. We have some sample horoscopes from antiquity. I picked one here out of Hunt and Edgar's Select Papyri out of the Louvre Classical Library, found on a papyrus in Egypt. This gives us a horoscope of the birth of Philoa, so it's a birth horoscope of this person, Philoa. The birth takes place in the 10th year of Antoninus Pius, Roman Emperor. That would correspond to AD 150. The person's birth took place in the month Fominoth, in the evening of the 15th to the morning of the 16th, but actually took place in the first hour of the night, which would probably be something like 6 to 7 p.m. The Sun is in the constellation Pisces, Jupiter and Mercury are in Aries, Saturn is in Cancer, Mars is in Leo, Venus and the Moon are in Aquarius, and the horoscope is a Scorpio horoscope. Well, all of that makes good sense in connection with ancient Greco-Roman paganism, where you had multiple gods, and the idea is that these gods were identified with the planets, or at least some of them were, and their movements in the sky were telling you about things that were going to happen in the future. However, astrology had influence in Christian and Jewish circles as well. Both Jews and Christians were influenced by astrology because it was, after all, very popular in ancient society, and both the synagogue and the church have been influenced by things going on in their culture at various times as well. Basically, since Jews and Christians do not believe in multiple gods, the planets were basically seen as representing angelic beings in one way or another. Here we have in our picture a tile floor mosaic from one of the Jewish synagogues. Several ancient synagogues have such mosaics, which show the zodiac symbols here in a kind of a circle, and the seasons. This particular photograph doesn't show you the four seasons, which are out in the corners there, but you can see the circle of 12 sectors. And in the upper left at 11 o'clock, you have what looks like a cat of some sort. That is Leo, and we actually have in Hebrew there the word for lion. And then if you look around at about 7 o'clock, you can see what looks like a scorpion, and at about 6:30, what looks like a archer and such, and over at around 4:30, a pair of fish and such. And these are the constellations of the zodiac, and you've got the names in Hebrew besides each other. In the middle, not terribly obvious what you're looking at there, but you're actually looking at a front-on view of a chariot, with the rider representing the sun and four horses pulling the chariot. So pagan pictures and symbols in a Jewish synagogue, and yet surely understood in some way that was, what should we say, correlated, harmonized, if you like, with Jewish theology. Well, the influence of astrology in Jewish Christian circles, however, was resisted by negative remarks in the Bible. if you've studied church history at all, you're aware that not all Christians have paid very good attention to the Bible, also true in Jewish circles. But in any case, the biblical statements regarding astrology, as we'll see later on in our talk, are strong enough that astrology did not have nearly as much influence in Jewish Christian circles as it did in pagan circles. However, interest in astrology revived a good deal with a reaction against Christianity in the Renaissance. We typically picture the Renaissance as a time of enlightenment, of escape from superstition, but in fact it wasn't necessarily an escape from superstition. It was a rejection of Christian belief, which was viewed by many then as superstition, and replacement with different kinds of superstition. It was a time of revival for astrology. In turning away from Christianity, many in the Renaissance went into occultism of one sort or another, and that included astrology. Now, admittedly, in ancient and medieval and Renaissance times, there was some problem in separating astrology from astronomy. Both of them were looking at the sky, and the question really was, is this information out there telling you anything about the future? And as we've suggested already, indeed, the stars do predict the seasons, if you like, and tell us something about the time at night. And so there may have been some difficulty then of trying to decide whether it also told you things about your personal future and that sort of thing. Some problem in separating astrology and astronomy. Johann Kepler, for instance, the discoverer of the planetary laws of motion, also cast horoscopes to earn money. Not sure what his view of the validity of them was, but at least he felt that there was some money to be had in horoscopes. And probably over his centuries, there's been more money to be made in horoscopes than there has been to be made in astronomy. A nice example of Renaissance astrology is found in the career of Geronimo Cardano, a mathematician, philosopher. He cast a horoscope for England's King Edward VI when Edward was quite young, and predicted that Edward would have serious illness at age 55. Only trouble was, Edward died at age 16. Cardano also cast his own horoscope, which virtually all astrologers do, and saw that he was to die at age 75. Well, in fact, Cardano did die at age 75, but this is muddled somewhat by the fact that he committed suicide. Was this predicted by the horoscope, or was this carried out by Cardano in order to fulfill the horoscope? One of the problems you run into now and again with astrology. Astrology in the West, however, particularly after the Reformation, nearly died out in those places where the church had been restored to biblical principles. When I was growing up, so that would be the 40s and 50s of the 20th century, astrology was, in some sense, by many people viewed as kind of harmless fun, a little bit like Halloween, and so not much was made of it. With the 60s and the rise of interest in the occult again, in the whole hippie movement and such, this has changed somewhat, and people have begun to be a little more concerned about the background and all of this. Since the 60s, there's been a revival in occultism, and this has included astrology as well. Os Guinness gives a parable of a campfire, which is rather instructive at this particular point. Guinness says, imagine you're out camping in an area where there's lots of wildlife, and you've got a little clearing that you're going to sleep in, and you build yourself a campfire there, not only to keep warm, but also to keep the wild animals away. But as the night goes on, the campfire begins to die down, and the wild animals begin to peep out of the woods because the fire is not scaring them anymore. It's gotten too small. Guinness says this is kind of a parable of what has happened in a modern Western civilization when some sort of Christendom, when some sort of Christianity was strong in our society. Occultism was more or less scared away or kept underground, if you like. But with the widespread rejection of Christianity, particularly in the 20th century, we begin to see more and more forms of occultism creeping out of the woods and beginning to become more apparent. And I think that is a fair statement of things. Well, that's a little tour of a history of astrology. We want to move on now and think a little bit about scientific problems for astrology. we will cite as a significant reference here for this particular topic a book by two astronomers, R.B. Culver and P.A. Iana, The Gemini Syndrome, Star Wars of the Oldest Kind, which pictures kind of a warfare between astronomy and astrology, and gives some helpful material on scientific problems for astrology. The first matter, which is significant in the question of whether there's anything really to astrology, is the question of what are astronomical objects. Ancient astrology had the planets as gods in the pagan forms of astrology, or planets as angels in the Christianized and Judaized version of astrology. But now telescopes and space travel show us that these objects out there are worlds rather like our Earth, not identical, large or smaller. None of them have quite a satisfactory environment as our Earth does, but big planets. Now, we can't absolutely rule out that they might not be gods, if some kind of polytheism is right, or angels, if Christianity or Judaism is correct, but they certainly don't give any appearance of being sentient beings of any sort. So nothing really to indicate that these objects are living beings like gods or angels, and therefore that somewhat reduces the idea that they might be telling us something about the future. Besides that, we now know a good bit about stars that we didn't in ancient times. We know that the stars are burning gas balls, rather like our sun. Some of them are a good deal bigger than our sun, some of them a good bit smaller, but all of them are shining gas balls that are basically producing their light by a combination of gravity pulling them in and heating them up and a nuclear reaction going on in the center of these stars, or at least so for the main sequence stars. Comets are what we might call large, dirty snowballs, and no obvious reasons why we should think of them as something to cause terror, as they often have in ancient, medieval, early modern history. Obviously, there could be some danger if one of these large, dirty snowballs actually struck the Earth. But the Earth has passed through the tail of comet on a couple of occasions with no particular disaster involved there. Well, these discoveries, again, require, we'd have to say, at least a large adjustment in astrology. They do not suggest the sort of thing that was understood by astrology in antiquity. They're not spirit beings, as far as we can tell. A third feature of ancient astrology is that ancient astrology was founded on the belief that the sun is the center around which the heavenly bodies moved, what we call geocentrism. And so on such a view, it would not be at all surprising that these smaller objects which move around the Earth are telling us something for the inhabitants of the Earth, just like when we sit in a planetarium, the objects that are projected on the ceiling are for our benefit in some sense. We're paying some admission fee to go to the planetarium, but these things are shined up there for our benefit. Well, Copernicus, as far back as 1540, showed that the movements of the objects in the sky could be understood in a much more simplified way if we understand the sun to be the center of these various planets instead of the Earth. We found out since then that the sun is one star among billions that are going around the Milky Way, but it's still true that our planets that we know about and named even from antiquity are going about the sun rather than about the Earth. Well, the upshot of that, which was eventually shown to fit the observations far better, is that it doesn't look like that the movement of the stars is something that is purely for our benefit, but rather that we would think that, it's telling us something about the nature of the universe, but it's not obviously telling us anything about our individual histories. Besides that, we now recognize that the stars are very, very distant, that they are typically suns, and that they're very numerous. They're far more numerous than any ancient could have known by observation. There were some who guessed there were an infinite number of stars in antiquity, but we now know that although you can see perhaps up to 6,000 stars without a telescope, that with telescopes you can now see millions of them, and with big telescopes, billions of them and such. Stars very numerous. The upshot is that the constellations basically disappear when dimmer stars are taken into account. So boundaries between constellations become a much more fuzzy question, and we realize also that if we were located somewhere else out in space, we'd have a very different set of constellations, etc. The constellations we see are basically the result of local perspective. And those things combined together about stars and constellations suggest then that there's no particular reason why we should view a particular constellation as having some significant mental, moral, spiritual significance on the lives of humans lived below it or anything of that sort. Again, kind of punching a hole in some of the whole agenda behind astrology. What about stellar influence itself? Remember, the big claim of astrology is that these things out there influence us. Well, we're not going to try and claim that the sun and moon have no effect on Earth. Without a sun, we'd be dead pretty quick. We get all our heat from the sun, basically, nearly all our heat from the sun, and our light, okay? And the sun and the moon together produce our tides. The moon actually produces a little more than the sun. And although tides we probably don't think much about here if we're a good ways away from the seashore, yet in fact they do have a significant effect at the seashore and a more minor effect on the weather and such away from the seashore. So they do have a big effect. But, of course, the claim of astrology is that the planets and the stars exert significant forces at a person's birth. But, in fact, the planets and stars exert negligible forces at a person's birth. If you compare the planets and stars and their gravity to the gravity of the mother and the doctor in the hospital building, they're absolutely insignificant compared with the mother and doctor in hospital, etc., huh? And if you compare the radiation from the stars and the planets to the radiation from room lamps in the hospital, again, the planets and stars are totally negligible compared to the illumination from the room lamps, etc. So, there's no particular reason to believe that we've got any forces there, and modern astrologers then have tried to invent other kinds of forces. There was the use of magnetism for a while, but that's again negligible, and so now they talk about more obscure forces of one sort or another. So why do astrological events produce successes occasionally of prediction? Well, my guess is that these successes are probably a combination of luck. You pick out particular events, and occasionally you're going to get some hits on predictions of one sort. Fraud, you get persons making some kind of prediction that perhaps is after the fact or things of that sort. And a third element I would add, which materialists would not add, is the occult. I believe the Bible gives us warrant to believe there are spiritual beings out there, and that those beings can have influence on what we remember, and even on certain things that happen around us, and that sort of thing. So my suggestion is that astrological successes are probably a combination of luck, fraud, and occult. In any case, we can say some things about what we have discovered astronomically. We have, for instance, discovered some new planets since the 1700s, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And what do we do with these extra planets? Well, presumably they ought to be included in astrological predictions. They never were before they were discovered. They usually are not now by most astrologers. Some astrologers do take Neptune, Pluto, Uranus, etc. into account. And these few that include them, there's no evidence that they have better results than the ones who ignore them. Well, why should it be that the planets that weren't known have no effect? That doesn't seem reasonable. We've got another more serious problem, and that's the whole question about sun signs. When you're told in an astrology column that you're an Aries or something of that sort, and the dates are given for when the sun is in Aries, you should realize that that is based on where the sun was 2,000 years ago. The movement of the Earth's axis, which has a period of 24,000 years, will gradually shift which sign of the zodiac the sun is in each month, And the upshot has been that the today the sun is in Pisces from March 5 to April 10th, as you can see on this little snippet of a star chart I have here for you on the screen. But if you look at a modern astrology column, you will find that Pisces is given its location 2,000 years ago. That is February 19th to March 20. And so in this newspaper astrology column, you're said to have a sun sign of Pisces if your birth is from between February 19th and March 20th. But that's not where the sun is now. Why is it that 2,000 years ago, that's what counts when you weren't born 2,000 years ago? And supposedly the astrology, your horoscope is based upon the position sun, moon, and stars when you're born, not 2,000 years before you're born. Modern newspaper astrology columns, then, are about one sign off, about a month off, from where the sun actually is. So that means if you've been reading the astrology columns, you've been reading the wrong sign for years. Astrologers, however, who adjust from this seem to have no better success than those who don't, which suggests that whatever they're doing, it really doesn't have much of anything to do with where the stars appear to be in the sky. Another problem with astrology is the twin problem. Astrological horoscopes, remember, are based on the position of the planets in the zodiac and horizon, etc., at the time of a person's birth. Well, identical twins, obviously, then are going to have virtually the same horoscope. Particularly, they're born just a few minutes apart, and they usually nobody has horoscopes that are that accurate. Well, identical twins often have very similar character, though sometimes they have very different lives, and an astrologer might say, well, the degree of the character is due to the similar horoscope, but the different lives is due to the different choices. Okay. But fraternal twins, born basically same time, often have very different character, and that, I think, is because their DNA is rather different compared to identical twins. And, of course, they are born under the same astrological signs. Why aren't they as similar as identical twins? Well, they aren't. And I think the reason is that you're looking at something other than astrology for the similar character, even in identical twins. And, of course, you've got time twins, kids who are born even closer together in time than identical twins or fraternal twins, since they're passing through two different mothers' birth canal, and born in the same hospitals or nearby hospitals, so they've got the same same horoscope, and yet very few similarities. And modern suggestion would be because it's not astrology that is really ruling in these particular matters. Well, so already that gives you some tests for astrology. Colvernianus, the Gemini syndrome, gives lots of examples on how to test astrology. They point out that there's no real correlation between a person's sun sign and person's talents or occupations, and I refer you to them for looking at that. We look at something here that's easy to look at visually in a PowerPoint talk, and that is marriage compatibility charts. What we're talking about here is a chart in which you have the husband sun sign on one side of the chart and the wife's sun sign on the other side of the chart and mark whether they're compatible or incompatible. We're going to look at three sets of charts, the chart of Terry King, Sidney Omar, and Carol Ryder. That is not their marriage compatibility, but their claims of what kind of marriage compatibility we get. Well, here's Terry King's with the females' sun signs listed down the left-hand side, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc., and the male sun sign listed across the top, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc., and black marks represent the incompatible sun signs, black boxes, and white boxes, the compatible sun signs. And there you are. It's a pretty specific sort of thing. Terry King gives a specific assignment for each of these combinations. When you look at Sidney Omar, he gives a very different set of combinations, you can see by just looking at the pattern. And when you look at Carol Ryder, again, a very different set of patterns. So what's going on? Guessing, I suspect, is what is going on. And when you get that much diversity in three major astrologers, you kind of suspect that probably what's going on is anything about what really happens. Huh? Now we turn, lastly, to biblical problems with astrology. For those who believe the Bible is God's revelation, this should be rather significant. For those who ignore it, we should at least point out that the Bible agrees with the findings of modern science on this point anyway, that astrology is something that is not a good idea. First of all, God forbids divination, the general category of fortune-telling, if you like, of which astrology is a sample. In Deuteronomy 18, verses 9 and 11, Moses says, "When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, don't learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft, casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist or consults the dead." Looking at a whole class of occult practices, magical practices, attempt to force the hand of some supernatural being by sacrificing one's children, and all of these things are basically things forbidden by God. A second point which the Bible makes is astrology isn't going to work against God. If you set yourself against God, you're going to be in trouble finally, independent of how much astrology you've got. Isaiah 47, verses 13-14, the prophet says to the Babylonians, "All the counsel you've received has only worn you out. Let your astrologers come forward, those stargazers who make predictions month by month, the menologists. Let them save you from what is coming upon you. Surely they," astrologers, stargazers, "are like stubble. The fire will burn them up. They cannot even save themselves from the power of the flame." There's also a cult connection in all of this. And here's what the Bible has to say about occultism. Isaiah 8, 19 through 20. "When men tell you to consult mediums and spiritists who whisper and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? Why consult the dead on behalf of the living? To the law and to the testimony. If they," medium spiritists, "do not speak according to this word, they have no light of dawn." Basically, the Bible is saying, look, the creator of the universe is certainly the one to get your information from, not people who are attempting to interpret it and perhaps guessing and things of that sort, and who can't even keep themselves alive. So compare what is claimed by these guys to the Bible, and if they don't agree with it, that's because they're in the dark. Huh? Finally, the Bible says, hey, God controls the universe, and so you shouldn't be running off after these other sources. Jeremiah 10, 1-3, "Hear what the Lord says to you, O house of Israel." It's what the Lord says. "Do not learn the ways of the nations, or be terrified by signs in the sky. Though the nations are terrified by them, though the pagans are terrified by them, the customs of the people are worthless." So what you really need to do is find out what the creator of the universe has to say and what he thinks is important. And if you do that, you will be all right. Biblical problems for astrology: God forbids divination. It won't work against God anyway. It has an occult connection. And the God of the Bible controls the universe, not the astrologers, not their sources, etc. Summary on astrology. Astrology is historically connected with paganism, polytheism, and idolatry. Yes, there have been attempts to remove it from those sorts of things, but that's a historical connection. Astrology is not supported by scientific evidence and is really quite arbitrary in things like where do the houses begin and end? Where do the constellations of the zodiac begin and end? That sort of thing, huh? And thirdly, astrology is condemned by the Bible as an attempt to live without dependence upon God. So, that's the end of our short tour here. A lot more could be said, but we're suggesting that there's enough information here to suggest that astrology is going to mislead us, and that would be a foolish thing to have happen to us. So, do not be misled by astrology. Thank you for your attention. May the Lord bless you.